From the Midas Roseburg studio, KQEN weather, the Umpqua Valley, sunny but cooler this afternoon, high of 83, clear and breezy, 56 tonight. On Saturday, sunny, 86, clear Saturday night down to 59. Sunday, sunny, 91. Monday and Tuesday, though, heating back up, 95, 96 degrees, respectively. And it's 73 degrees now, 10 degrees cooler than this time yesterday. KQEN News Time, 1235.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here. We appreciate you checking us out each day. We have Inside Douglas County to talk with folks around the Umpqua Valley area and sometimes beyond as well about some of the bigger issues of the day. Legislative check-in with State Representative Cedric Caden. Where do we find you this afternoon?
Well, I'm actually parked on the side of the road between Curtin and Drain. If people don't know where that's at, it's kind of off of the freeway to the west a little bit. Yoncalla, Drain, Curtin, and you're back on the freeway.
And of course, your district has sections of Douglas and Lane County. You've got a lot of geography to cover.
I do. It goes over to Elkton from this side of the woods that I'm working in, or this side of the district that I'm working in now. It goes up to the McKenzie Bridge area, a little bit north of that, and clear down to Diamond Lake. So I get a lot of driving.
Talk about what's been going on recently with your work in the legislature.
So from the public standpoint, set aside COVID, where obviously there's not as much ability for the public to be engaged, but it's kind of working on task force, kind of quiet. There's not a lot of visual stuff going on right now. I mean, if you dig for it, you can certainly find it. But I'm working on several task force. I'm on the child care task force that we've talked about multiple times here to try and get some equity for our rural area districts, like the district I represent, in the reimbursement for the child care providers, and to make sure that there is some child care available in those areas when we come back out of COVID, particularly, and for the child care providers that are, you know, considered essential and continuing to work, and make sure that their businesses have resources to stay open to do that for those essential workers and the rest of the workers now as we reopen. So child care task force, pretty frequently, every couple of weeks, we're moving forward on that. Another one that I'm working on, I was on the asked by the governor's executive order to be on the mental health advisory committee, which was a combination of about 35 different entities. It was the 44th committee that has been convened in the last five bienniums on mental health, and the governor abruptly closed it this week, which was a little bit of a surprise to myself and others. They did set aside $100 million and hope to double that with some federal dollars for youth services to housing and workforce. So I thought we would have more activity on that. And then another task force that I'm on, just so I was on the phone yesterday with, is the 770 workforce, or affordable health care for Oregonians. Other people call it the universal health care task force. So task force are going on, and then emergency board has been the big news this week.
Yeah, talk about the e-board and some of the decisions there.
Okay, so the e-board has decided to dispense, as you're aware, folks are aware that we got some money from the federal government. Depending on how you calculate that money, it was a little less than $2 billion or $1.6 to $1.8 billion came into the state of Oregon to deal with COVID. And I know our counties, like Douglas County, has been pretty frustrated that that money isn't trickling down. There's still some frustration there to help out the counties individually. But the e-board dispensed $200 million, or set up to dispense $200 million of the CARE Act money. Can just run down through that. $30 million of that is going to go to folks for paid leave, and then $35 million will go for a one-time $500 payment to all these people. And my office has been fielding hundreds of unemployment claims through the employment office. Last count, we still had about 70,000 claims that weren't being paid. They are going to take $35 million and do a $501 one-time payment to people that haven't received the unemployment. Now, that's kind of a Band-Aid. Would rather see that they actually get the unemployment issue fixed, but that has taken an enormous amount of time for myself and my staff. There's going to be another $25 million that goes out to small businesses for businesses that have been affected by COVID that have 25 employees and less. And if you didn't participate in the federal program, Payroll Protection Program, known as the PPP Loan Program. So if you didn't qualify or didn't participate and you are a employer of 25 employees or less through the Oregon Small Business, you should be able to apply for some funding there. Again, $25 million with that. $50 million for the arts. Don't really have a breakdown of what that's going to go to. You were talking about music, theater, et cetera, that's going to go help with the arts. I suspect most of that will go to the Portland area, but even in Cottage Grove, we do have a little theater here. So they will probably be able to apply for some funds there. We've got $62 million going to minority-owned, or more specifically African-American-owned businesses that have been disproportionately affected by COVID. That money will be between $2,000 and $100,000 maximum per business. They will also receive $500 to $3,000 for individuals. So that's the nutshell on the $200 million COVID that the emergency board met and allocated this week.
Maybe explain to folks, because I don't think people are necessarily all that familiar with the emergency board. How many people sit on it, and where are they pulled from?
So the emergency board is made up of sitting legislators, typically legislators that have been there, you know, with some seniority, but not necessarily. I think it's 16, but Kyle, I could have that number wrong off the top of my head. And so it's kind of like the emergency board hasn't been like the COVID committee that has been convened and some budget committees that are being convened. Emergency board is historically there. And the function of the emergency board is, while we're in session, we deal with activities, and law changes, and the budgets for the biennium for a two-year cycle. And Oregon is set up to be a citizen legislature, meaning that the job that we have in the legislature is not intended to afford a family wage job, meaning we are expected to have, you know, most people that work in the legislature have to have another job to feed their families and whatnot. And so during the times that the legislature is not in session, which ends up being about 6 months in the odd years, like 1921, and it ends up being about 9 months or a little more, depending on special session or not special sessions, in the even year, 2020, 2022, and whatnot. And so during those times, over that year plus, the emergency board is what would handle any types of natural disasters, pandemic like COVID. And so they are designed to be there to make a quick decision until the legislature is either back in session or called into session. So it's a normal function of the legislative body to have that emergency board. It's not a new convened program.
You mentioned back at the front of things, the mental health task force. Obviously, during COVID-19, there's been a lot of focus on the economic aspect to business, et cetera. But yet, we're certainly hearing both locally and nationally that the mental health side of COVID-19 is a big issue.
Mental health of COVID-19 is a really big issue. I got to tell you, there was a lot of frustration that was felt. You know, of course, we're doing this virtually, but, you know, you can almost feel the vibe that the governor came in and announced that she was closing that down. There was a lot of us, myself included, felt like that there was more work to be done in that. And then the funding was significantly less than what we had anticipated for that. And then, you know, hopes for some more federal funding there. But mental health in Oregon, I've said this for 6 years that I've been in the legislature. I've worked in the healthcare industry and worked with a lot of the clients that could have benefit from better mental health services in Oregon. It's a big issue. And I've often said it's the last frontier in healthcare that we really haven't tackled in Oregon. You know, there are valid, good meaning attempts to it, but it always seems to come up a little bit short.
All right, we're going to take a break at Inside Douglas County. State Representative Cedric Hayden with us. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com, 1245 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248. Lars Larson coming at 1. Later today, Riverbend Live Reconnect. Norm Smith, retired head of the Ford Family Foundation, will be with me. Also, the leader of Southern Avenue, a band that played at Riverbend Live last year. He'll join us from Memphis to talk about what that group's been doing during the COVID-19 situation. On Monday's program, State Senator Floyd Prezansky will be with us. State Representative Cedric Hayden here this afternoon. Of course, there's been one special session of the Oregon State Legislature, but another one is coming. Any word yet as to when that might be?
Well, I haven't looked at my computer in the last couple of days, so I don't have a date. Generally, it's coming soon. We're thinking August, but you know, unless I am behind a little bit, I don't have dates yet. So we're just watching that. One thing that is going on that's kind of interesting, if people have been tracking this, there's been a movement. Every 10 years we do the census, and then the amount of population and where people are affects the district. Like we talked early on here, my district that I represent goes down to Diamond Lake, McKenzie, Yoncall, Drain, over to Elkton. Large district with not a large population center in that district, so a lot of geographic areas. But as people move and more people come in, those lines shift. And so there are 30 districts. The state's divided with 30 districts for the Senate and 60 districts. And as more people or less people come in, those districts change. So there has been a movement by a group called People Not Politicians to want to set up a committee, basically, or a group to decide how those lines are drawn. Currently in Oregon, it's drawn by the legislature and then confirmed by the Secretary of State and then eventually the Oregon Supreme Court if it goes to that point. And some states have independent redistricting, which I would like to see. The interesting part about this is the People Not Politicians that want the independent redistricting to draw those lines filed in federal court because of COVID. Judge McShane actually gave the opportunity for our Secretary of State, Bev Clarno, to extend the signature gathering. Secretary of State Clarno did extend that, and now our Attorney General is taking that to appeals court in the Ninth Circuit Court on the federal level because, you know, it's pretty clear that the supermajority doesn't want people to be able to draw those lines. They want to be able to gerrymander those districts to maintain control. So that's an interesting thing going on right now.
Now, well, of course, some people would say as well that the gerrymandering can happen from the legislature sometimes.
Well, that's true. And so the process now is the legislature does gerrymander it. I mean, the legislature does decide those lines. The effort to get on the ballot with these people, not politicians, is to get independent, not the legislature, to decide that. So you'd have to take individuals that weren't in the legislature set up by this ballot measure, and then the non-legislative body would come together and decide where those lines are. Currently, it is the legislature that designs it. And so that's why we talk about, you know, politicians are gerrymandering the lines, meaning, you know, like if you look at, say, Eugene, for example, there's quite a few districts that reach into Eugene and kind of take the heart of the metropolitan area of Eugene, if you will, and then go out into large areas. And so it offsets a lot of the rural who tend to vote a little different than the metropolitan areas. So, you know, they kind of it's like pieces of a pizza, if you will, metropolitan areas in the center of the pizza, and these areas touch that center to kind of offset the population base. And so we'd like to see something a little more fair than that.
How do you know, though, that this new, if it went through, process would be any more fair?
Well, I guess you just look at what we've done for the last, you know, three cycles or 30 years or so, and you look at some of the lines, and it's like, why? You know, I look at some of the lines, if you blow them up, there's literally houses that get carved out of districts based on who is living in that house and whatnot. And I just don't think that's the way that we should be doing things. And I think if you do get an independent group, not controlled by either Democrats or Republicans, that you would have a lot better shot to do it. And there are some states that do that with success.
Interesting to see where that goes. For the special session, whenever it gets here, how much disagreement do you think there's going to be among lawmakers as to how the state budgets should be shifted because of the shortfalls due to COVID-19?
Well, I think there's going to be a robust discussion about it. What we're starting to hear with that is that the governor is proposing and focusing on, you know, shutting down the, you know, prisons and cutting mental health programs, cutting programs for seniors, and then preserving the education budget of $9 billion. And not taking any cut there. But at the same time, there's discussion about whether school will even start or not. And so there's going to be, you know, when the government comes along and basically mandates the closure of the economic engine, shutting off the economic engine that brings the revenue in, for the most part, we're definitely going to see a reduced budget coming up, not just in the last half of this biennium, but, you know, significantly in the next biennium and going forward. And so there's going to have to be some tough decisions to be made in there, and those always get a bit contentious.
The governor yesterday putting out a statement about the reopening of school after meeting with an advisory group that has 42 people, including a couple of folks from Douglas County that are part of it. And, of course, school districts are going through phases, there's our new buzzword, of their reopening plans. Roseburg School District has got a draft now and plans to come back in kindergarten through grade 5 days a week, with the middle school and high school students in a mix of being there and learning remotely. A lot of challenges there. Even down to busing and having less kids per bus. I mean, school districts are really going to be at the kind of the epicenter of needing more funds, it would seem like, to pull off any kind of school year.
Yeah, and, you know, that's across the board, and we've kind of, depending on how much Governor Brown, you know, hitches Oregon's wagon to, like we saw earlier with Washington and California, on the school districts, and the Portland school districts are talking about, you know, maximum of 2 days in class type thing. And so, yeah, there are being plans for schools to reopen and locally, but there is the governor has shown that she may take control of that executively, and so we don't know exactly where that's going to land. How do you provide all those special scenarios for education and other things in school, and still have the budgets maintained? That's the balancing act of what we're going to have to do with the special session. And the reality is that there's not going to be the funds there that we had anticipated 6 months ago.
And obviously, other areas of state government to provide their services, they've got the same challenges with additional costs and money that needs to be spent to do things so they can continue to serve the public during this COVID-19 situation.
Yeah, and we often call it unfunded mandates, but our counties, we talked about that a little bit. Our counties have done a lot to, Douglas County, hiring epidemiologists and staying ahead of this and trying to keep those cases as low as possible. That all costs money. And so, at some point, there's a hope that the federal dollars do get trickled down further to our county level so that they can continue to, do their functions, not only under COVID, but their regular functions also.
All right. State Representative Cedric Hayden out of time. Thanks for being on Inside Douglas County today.
Thank you, sir.
1257 News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.